But that doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red. Crying's not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining, because I'm free. Nothing's worrying me.
Welcome once again to the Fleming Foundation's podcasts. I'm Rex, and sitting over there again with a stogie, enjoying it, it seems, and me enjoying a blue can of something special and delicious in it. We are here to celebrate everyone whose birthday is in April, and we've done some already, and we really appreciate the comments that are coming in about these, people talking about their favorite people. Today we follow through, starting with the 13th, and a guy who was a celebrated...
villain.
Celebrated villain. Was he a hero or was he a villain? We don't know. His name was Butch Cassidy. He was born on the 13th of April, 1866. Now, was he really with the Sundance Kid?
Well, there was this gang of criminals who found a disputed piece of territory where nobody had real jurisdiction, that is, between several states. And so they were the hole-in-the-wall gang. They launched their petty reign of terror on various towns in the Southwest. They were certainly major criminal figures. The movie was okay.
Yeah.
I found it, I can't stand Paul Newman because of, he's always grinning at the camera and mugging and leering.
Maybe
he's,
Gregory Peck you'd like better in that role. Back to Gregory Peck again.
The idea of taking Paul Newman seriously as a tough guy, that has never seemed to be very
probable. He was the brains of the operation.
Yeah, right. It was an okay movie.
Yeah, but, it's worth seeing, I think.
Yeah. A somewhat more significant figure was born in 1743, Thomas Jefferson.
Hey, I know that guy.
The third president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
He's usually pilloried by many people on the right as being some sort of advocate of the French Revolution. He fell for a lot of silly ideas that were in the air in the 18th century, but there is a depth of wisdom in Thomas Jefferson. He understood that you couldn't trust anybody in this world, neither the poor and the disenfranchised, nor the rich and powerful. And that's why he wanted government broken up into small competing pieces where everybody could sort of learn to manage his own life. His most brilliant proposal was in the state of Virginia. He wanted both a system of education and a system of ward government whereby the neighborhoods would manage the neighborhood. In other words, you'd have a little government there. They would have their own school. Then you'd have the neighborhoods would coalesce into a city with maybe a high school. And then
It's a hierarchy.
Yeah, it was a hierarchy, but it would allow everybody at the appropriate level to manage his own affairs.
Nice.
Now, in Catholic political theology, this is called the principle of subsidiarity, but it is also the principle of Thomas Jefferson. I used to give lectures to Catholic groups on comparing the political thought of Jefferson with the political thought of Thomas Aquinas. When two people starting with such opposite assumptions, two brilliant and original minds, come together on something like this, I think it's because it's something genuinely human and important. I never fail to learn something from reading Jefferson's letters or looking at the notes on the state of Virginia.
Well, he was a guy who's a proponent for having the people have guns. And I always thought, this is just, and I may be totally off, you can correct me if I'm off. I always thought that the reason he wanted the people to have guns was not necessarily, certainly for the protection and the hunting, but moreover, that we would have guns in case our government got out of a hand and then we would be able to defend ourselves against our government. He wasn't, he was wary of government.
That, exactly. As one of his more brutal sayings was that the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time by the blood of patriots and tyrants.
Yeah, love
and
that one.
That was the general feeling of the Second Amendment. It was inspired. All the Bill of Rights were inspired by things in the American experience. What inspired the Second Amendment were the events at Lexington and Concord, where the British government tried to seize an arms depot set up by the patriots because they wanted the right to overthrow any government that became oppressive. That was the point of the Second Amendment, so the people could rise up and overthrow the government.
I was thinking about this too. When Jefferson was thinking about having guns, was he considering the fact that guns would always be legal all the way. For instance, you could have a fully automatic, you could have a bazooka, you could have a tank. If you could afford it, you could put it in your backyard. So, because if you look at defending yourself against the government right now, it's a joke.
Yeah, no, it's true. Technology has changed. And I don't know what Mr. Jefferson would say were he to come into a world full of gangbangers and thugs who are given the right to vote, welfare dependents given the right to vote. None of that would have, he would have been horrified by all of it. But on the grounds that a hardworking member of the middle classes shouldn't be able to resist an oppressive government, he would have said, we live under a tyranny.
This lady here spoke of the common people. I'm going to suggest on the 14th in 1936, this lady was born, and let me see if you can guess it, she was a coal miner's daughter.
Yes, born in, Butcher's Hollow?
Yeah, it was something
like Butcher's Hollow, Kentucky. Yeah, Loretta Lynn.
Loretta Lynn, yeah, that's a lady who had, it was amazing. She had 16 number one hits and 70 songs on the charts. That is off the charts. Well, it's on the charts, actually. She was a coal miner's daughter for reals because her dad died of black lung disease.
Yeah.
Amazing.
She was the real thing, you know, and... She's still alive, isn't she?
I believe so.
Yeah, she's still alive. She doesn't like what is called country music today, which is just pop music with a country twang. It's about as southern as the Dukes of Hazzard as a TV show. Hmm. But there are still many good people in country music, but it's unfortunately dominated by big money interests. A wonderful singer, wonderful performer. One of my favorite Loretta Lynn songs was a duet she did with Ernest Tubb in the mid-1960s called Sweet Thang.
I slipped out of the house about sundown while Mama was a-washing her hair. And you can bet your bottom dollar she'll come looking for me when she finds that I'm not there. And if she catches her sweet thing running around, I know there'll be the devil to pay. She'll come blowing like a cyclone right through that door, and I can hear exactly what she'll say.
Well, has anybody here seen Sweet Thing? I got a notion he'll be headed this way. Cause when my sweet thing is out tomcatting around, he finds a sandbox like this to play. Sweet thing does happen by, you'd better take my advice. And if you blank more than twice, you better have something in your eye.
Ernest sings, you know, in his off-key, wonderful way about... He was in the back room of this place talking to the waitress and her believing everything that I said. When the door popped open, Loretta walked in loud enough to raise the dead. And then she comes in with her, has anyone here seen Sweet Thing? And it's a wonderful duet between two genuinely great country music performers. On the 14th, one of the more controversial sports heroes in America was born, Pete Rose. Born 1941.
Oh.
Pete Rose, his nickname was Charlie Hustle. He showed his greatness early as a minor league player, played with the Reds. He was a switch hitter. Depending on how you count, he is perhaps one of the greatest consistent hitter in the history of baseball.
Huh.
And unfortunately, as later on the manager of the Reds, it was discovered that he had been betting on baseball games, including games that the Reds were involved in. And so he has been sort of permanently debarred.
Yeah, that's what I remember about him. I don't remember how good of a baseball player. I just remember he was naughty.
He's been kicked out of baseball. He is arguably among the top 10 or 15 greatest baseball players of all time. And he was a man without the kind of natural ability that some people were born with, but he never let it go. He was in a minor league team for a year or two, and he and my father got into this sort of joshing contest.
Really?
Because my father was a team owner in the same league. I think it was the Sally League at that time.
Sally League.
The South Atlantic League.
Oh.
And... Yeah, there were no Sallys in the Sally League, let me tell you.
I thought it was.
But and because he was a great fielder as well as a great batter, he'd always manage to somehow defeat my father's team, and then he'd make a joke at it. He was a tough man. He was a hard man. He never let anything go. He reminds me a little bit of Ty Cobb, a genuinely great baseball player whose reputation has also been blackened by envious people. Pete Rose did something wrong and something bad.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. He is still one of the greatest players in the history of the game, and he should be in the Hall of Fame.
And speaking of one of the greatest, this man was considered the smartest man in the world easily in his day and age. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is Leonardo da Vinci, 1452, on the 15th of April, the smartest man of his day. Why do you think people thought he was the smartest man?
I don't know. I think that stuff is all pretty much PR. He was interestingly, Michelangelo couldn't stand Leonardo. Leonardo was a perfectionist, which is why so many of his paintings are left unfinished. He, like Michelangelo, was pushing art to the point that it became an obsession. He is clearly not only a very great painter, but he was also, as we know, an inventor, a designer.
Yeah.
He was quite a brilliant person.
I saw something that looked like a submarine,
a flying machine. He was full of strange fancies and ideas. Whether any of them would have worked, I don't know. But he's certainly a man worth celebrating. On the 15th also, a famous French sociological thinker, one of the founders of sociology, 1858, Émile Durkheim. I don't think sociology is a science.
What is sociology?
I don't think it's the science of studying society. I don't think it should be allowed to be taught in universities, and I think that everybody should be forced to turn in their degrees if they have one. But Durkheim was a serious social and political thinker. He was one of those people who knew that the French Revolution had destroyed French society, and a number of people had come along proposing sort of utopian socialist plans for putting it all back together. Durkheim was the heir to that, and he initiated a fairly serious look at social problems. Why, for example, do people commit suicide?
Right.
He is not one of my favorite kinds of thinkers, but if you're going to have that kind of thought, then Durkheim is among the most brilliant.
Well, he would have a point if he can prove why people do commit suicide. So it would be bona fide. His science would be bona fide studying people. That seems reasonable.
The problem is with treating it as a science, there's a lot of wisdom and observation, and he knew that suicide rates were an indication of a broader social breakdown as they are today. We have tremendous problem in America with adolescent suicide.
That's why I brought it up, because it's huge.
And it means there's something wrong in our world, something wrong in the way children are brought up.
Mm.
And it's like the divorce rate, the abortion rate, the suicide rate, the drug dependence. These are all signs of human failure, and it's therefore the failure of a broader society. It's the decay of Christianity. It's the loss of all the things that bind us together as human beings in a society.
Well, that's a little depressing, but this next gentleman was not depressing. As a matter of fact, I spent, as I was trying to understand this gentleman, I must have spent an hour and a half looking at videos of this great, great comedic talent. In 1889, Charlie Chaplin was born, and wow, I studied a little bit about his career and what he did and how he was blacklisted. That would be something I want to know about, but what a genius. And he was given awards because of the groundbreaking ideas he had in actually creating film.
He's a great filmmaker. He was a great silent performer. He created this clown character, the little tramp.
The tramp, yeah.
It's a little bit maudlin, a little bit sentimental for me. But his best films are still worth watching. I can't say I'm much like The Great Dictator, except a few scenes of it in which Jack Oakey, playing the Mussolini dictator, manages to one-up Chaplin doing Hitler. It's pretty funny, and Limelight is a pretty good movie. Chaplin wrote music. He did all sorts of things. Of course, he scandalized the world by marrying Eugene O'Neill's very young daughter. She was young enough to be his kid.
Almost all of them were young, really young.
Yeah.
But I was thinking that he fought hard to stay with the non-talkies. He thought it was kind of, it didn't give the right type of thing. He just thought that it was better if there were no words and there were music. But he does have one early movie where he sings gibberish. He can't remember the words to the song, and so his girl there writes him on a sleeve, and while he's dancing, the sleeve flies up, so he's got to make up the words.
Yeah.
I have no idea what he was saying. It sounded French to me.
La spinache en la bouchon, cigarette portobello, sirop qui spaghetto, chi le tu la ti la tua.
But that whole thing is hilarious, and from there I just couldn't stop. I think it's amazing.
What is sort of interesting about Chaplin is that, unlike a lot of silent film stars, he actually was a great comic talent with words as well. This is where it got him into trouble. As a fairly young man, he performed at various political rallies, which were Communist Party rallies, Communist Front Group rallies, and he was then eventually identified as a person of suspicious background, and I think for a while he was forbidden to re-enter the United States.
Yeah, he lost his citizenship.
Yeah. Anyways, he was a British subject originally, and so he was an immigrant. It is something of hysterical overreaction, what they did, but it's too bad. But he was a genius.
Signora Pilasina, voulez-vous la taximite? Le junta sous la cita. Tula, 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 wa. Se montia si le mora, le sontia so crevora, le zoncia comme sora, c'è la pozza di la tua.